It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the complexities of grandparents raising their grandchildren. The nonprofit advocacy group Generations United, it cites nearly 8 million children live in households headed by grandparents or other relatives. Be part of this conversation. Call in with a question. Share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Judy Dysock is a grandmother raising her grandchild and a participant in the group called Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Peer Support Group in Waukesha. Judy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Good morning. Linda Senger here as well, licensed social worker and organizer of the Waukesha group. Linda, welcome.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Linda, let's start with you. You started this support group 5 years ago for grandparents raising their grandchildren, and it's served hundreds of people in the process. Why did you form this group?
Well, Kate, we started in 2018. I'm an ongoing child protective social worker for Waukesha County, and I deal with kids who are placed outside of the home due to abuse and neglect. And we've seen, at that point, we've had grandparents caring for grandkids ongoing basis. I've been doing this for 32 years, and it's not a new thing. But the numbers have grown exponentially. And in 2018, we decided that it was time that we provide some additional support to the grandparents. Having grandkids placed is different as being a placement option, very different than being an aunt or an uncle or a cousin agreeing to take in a child, because the dynamics are so very different. Oftentimes it's the biological adult child who's been not able to raise their children. And we ask the grandparents to step it up. But a great need, and the grandparents really needed support from our department as well as from each other and learning from each other. So there's a lot of dynamics that go with it, but we felt the need was really obvious and we had to do something. So that's why we put this together.
Judy, this is personal for you. Your granddaughter has been in your care since she was 5. You adopted her at age 8. What has the support group meant for you?
Well, it's been a lot of interesting things that happen. People tell their stories. They come in and they tell their stories. And it usually in the beginning, when one arrives, one is pretty shaken up and discombobbled, because people have never anticipated this in their lifetime, especially those of us who are retired. And then there are younger grandparents who have jobs, and they need to be able to vent to people who understand, because they've gone through it or are going through it. My husband and I and another couple and Linda were the founders of the group. And so in the beginning, it was everybody was discombobled, as I said, crying, telling the stories, because it's very personal and you don't know what to do. You don't know where to go. And so as we started to do this, we found there was a lot of healing in it. And then more people came. And the people who originally were there were able to help those people. And so the cycle goes on. It's been very good from the standpoint of, I think the best thing is that you know that somebody else is in the same spot and you know where to go, and you can listen and learn from each other.
How is your granddaughter doing, may I ask?
Excellent. Mm-hmm. She's doing super. She's in seventh grade. She's 12 now. She's doing very, very well. One of the things I always say has helped and certainly would tell other people is counseling is a good thing to do. Mm. The child has someplace to go to another adult to be safe. Every one of these children has a different take on life, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And they have difficulties, disabilities. They already are at risk because of the situation, and the abandonment that they feel is deeply set. So it's something to deal with all the time. And then you have to deal with usually the parent of the child who happens to be your child.
Mm.
And that gets a little complicated. And so guidance is always helpful in that way. That's also something that we might talk about within the group. But it's tricky and complicated. But she's doing well, and thank you for asking.
Yes, Judy Dysock there is a grandmother and a participant in the Waukesha Support Group for Grandparents Providing Care. Linda Sanger with us, organizer of this group, as we talk about care grand families in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions and your experiences, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Linda, what are the complexities and the biggest barriers that grandparents face when starting to care full-time for that grandchild? You mentioned the placement has complexities for you as a social worker.
Yeah. And again, we have our members of our group come from different places. Certainly, many of the grandparents we work with, their grandkids were placed through Waukesha County Juvenile Court due to protection and safety concerns. But we have other members, they have a voluntary placement with their grandkids. Some have, we do have folks who have guardianship through kind of the formal measures through our system, but some have gotten guardianship out privately.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of all varies. For folks in our system, just going through the juvenile court process it's a lot. It's a process they're not familiar with, and they have to be licensed as a level one foster home and a lot of different steps. For those who are not in the formal court system, we've learned over time, many of them have these kids. They may have a private guardianship. They have no clue as to benefits that they're eligible for, resources. They're just doing it kind of the skin of their teeth. They have no clue. Mm-hmm. So a big thing that we've learned over time is provide the need to provide information to grandparents, again, in Waukesha County, who are not involved in the system, and they need to understand the resources that are available. We have many grandparents have come through our door. They've been going through the retirement funds to pay for daycare, to pay for basic cares of their grandkids. Not what they had planned for. They had planned to go and retire and be in Hilton Head, and instead they're, or some other warm place, but they are using their resources to raise their grandkids. And there are a lot of resources that are available to them, but they have no idea. So education is real key, hooking them up with resources and different programs that will make their lives a little bit easier, as well as helping out the grandkids. So it's complex.
I wonder, Judy, at the support group, do grandparents talk about their age and their capacity to be able to raise a child for years to come? I mean, what happens if they fall ill or have an accident?
Well, that is always something that we think about.
Mm.
And there are a variety of ages that are there. Yes, we have. And the nice thing is that Linda, you know, has provided for us speakers who come in. And one of them recently were lawyers who could help us to set up wills and do that sort of thing, because we do have to think about that. And it is always looming out there, especially for those of us who are probably the oldest in the group, and I won't mention any names. it is something that we think about and we do discuss. Yes, absolutely.
Judy Dysock and Linda Sanger with us. They're active in the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Support Group in Waukesha. Be part of this discussion about grand families. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives along the way. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss resources in Wisconsin for grandparents raising grandchildren, including support groups and financial assistance. Judy Dysock is part of the group Grandparents Raising Grandchildren in Waukesha. Linda Senger is organizer of the group and a licensed social worker for Waukesha County Health and Human Services. Call in with a question or comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Linda, you say some families who adopt grandchildren avoid sharing their circumstances with school. They avoid sharing their circumstances with the acquaintances around them. Why is that?
Well, I think specifically, if I could talk about the kids first, often kids who are placed with grandparents, either just a temporary physical custody order through juvenile court, a guardianship, or even an adoption, which is less frequent, but we have grandparents who adopt. The kids are the outsiders, especially in the school system. You've got, they're being raised by grandparents. Their friends are raised by their biological parents, and they're younger and all this stuff, and they kind of stand out. And so I have had many kids that I work with, even on my caseload, they keep it. They just stay, I'm just staying with my aunt and uncle for a little while. They'll make up stories. They're not comfortable with the situation. They have alliances with their and feelings about their parents. They're in a tough spot. So some kids will just make up stories to try to fit in. And as they get more comfortable, and that's going to be their reality, they're going to basically be raised until they're adults with their grandparents. As they become more comfortable, therapy helps. Kids are more inclined to speak about it. If I could just say a cool thing about our group, as we meet again once a month, but the kids are a part of that.
Oh.
We have dinner together. And then we work with the past couple of years working with Healing Hearts. The adults meet and the kids will do activities with the Healing Heart volunteers. And in that, the kids are making friends with other kids living the same situation they are. It is just a cool thing. The friendships that have developed amongst the kids. And to be honest, that's something we never even thought of when we put this together 5 years ago. So it's been a helpful and it's been a supportful thing for the kids.
Oh, they realize they're not alone as they
yes.
meet other kids. So Judy, you alert the school each year of your granddaughter's circumstances. Why do you do that?
Well, I feel that truth is truth and truth helps. And if the teachers know about the situation and the administration knows, everybody's on the same page, so that in case something does happen, they know there's a background here that's not your quote unquote normal background. And that, you know, everybody has problems and it doesn't matter what kind of a family you come from, but at least if they, all teachers have been extremely appreciative of being notified about things, because then they can do a better job and they're treating my child. And I say, my child, we did adopt Michaela. It's worked out very, very well. In the beginning, when she was in elementary school, there was also a matter of safety because we did not know what her father might do. He was kind of a loose screw. I don't know how else to say that nicely, but he really had problems. And we needed to notify not only the school, but the police. You're working under a lot of stress. The child is under stress. We're under stress. And with everybody knowing the same thing, it helps an awful lot.
How has adopting Michaela changed your relationship with your friends and, you know, the world you live in with adults?
Well, I think at this point in my life, the people who were my friends remain my friends, and they know the situation. I can't do the same things that they can do because you couldn't leave a small child and, you know, take off for Europe or whatever. It just didn't work. You would be, you know, abandoning. We had to be very careful about abandonment issues for her. So we didn't do the things that other people could do, which doesn't feel good. And certainly we didn't plan for, but this is a calling. And Linda keeps reminding all of us that not all parents, grandparents can do this or are willing to do it. And so, you know, your big yes, your big commitment, also has little yeses along the way, and that includes your friends. And my friends understand, and they're extremely supportive. I don't have a slew of friends, but that's it's worked, and I'm very grateful for them. They have also done things to support us the best that they can without actually living the situation.
So you feel you have support, you have respite, and in case you need time for yourself.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I do. I mean, it's not, what can I say? Our particular child has been very easy. I don't know why, but that's just her personality. She came with a whole lot of wisdom. She's known us from day one. I was there, I saw her born. And we would keep her on weekends, even though we knew it was a difficult situation. And that she was in with her mother. And we waited for the right time to pull her out, because that's exactly what we had to do in order to save her life. And you know, it's been a road.
Judy Dysock, grandmother participant in the Waukesha Support Group for Grandparents Providing Care. Linda Singer, licensed social worker organizer of this group. You can join in the conversation, call in with questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Linda, you touched on that there are resources. There's assistance, financial assistance to grand families. What is available through either state or federal government?
Sure. Grandparents would be eligible, most situations would be eligible for kinship benefits. So it's a stipend. It's not, you're not going to fund a trip to Europe on it, obviously, but it's a help. It's a set amount of money. It's a rate that the state provides through the kinship program. The kids are eligible for insurance, Title 19 benefits. Grandparents often are eligible for some daycare assistance, and that's those benefits can be obtained through your local county government, and it's an application process. But those supports are real helpful on the financial end. And again, there are other resources available. We've connected our grandparents. Again, I said earlier we have a monthly or bi-monthly speakers. So we pull in different presenters who can provide grandparents with legal information, community information, and different resources that will be a benefit for them. And but it's a matter of people need to know that those resources are available. Many grandparents have no clue, and they're just kind of struggling, and they really don't need to. So they need to seek assistance from their local county government.
Let's bring in Johanna in Marquette County. Johanna, hi.
Hi.
What would you like to bring up?
I'm just wondering if there's any resources for grandparents raising grandchildren in Marquette County. We used to have a group, but it's no longer available. And those of us who are older, trying to do the best job we can, are totally isolated. I have no one to talk to. And I'm 74, raising a 5-year-old. So it's really a little bit difficult. And I'm just wondering, is there anything to support us when we have retirement? So I'm not eligible
And
for any of the.
I'm sorry to jump in here, Johanna. Linda, go ahead in the short amount of time we have. Go ahead.
Sure. I can tell you, I know it's difficult, certainly upstate. I've received calls from people wanting to be a part of our group virtually, and that's not something we can do. But Department of Family, Children and Family Services, they do offer programming for relative placements, and they do have some virtual meetings. There are virtual meetings that are going on more so upstate. So if you go to the DCF website and look up relative support groups, kin support programs, There are resources on there. And I do know that there are some virtual groups because I referred some people upstate to some of those resources. I don't know how great they are, but it's an
They're
option.
There, yes.
Yep.
Linda and Judy, thank you for joining us. Linda Sanger, licensed social worker, organizer of Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Peer Support Group in Waukesha. Judy Dysock, grandmother raising her grandchild, part of the support group. There's more conversation ahead about family, friends, and neighbors filling in the gaps. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As Wisconsin lawmakers debate legislation to expand tax credits to help families offset childcare costs, we dig into the patchwork of caregiving for families who may get help from family, friends, and neighbors. Be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. Share your scenario, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anna Powell is Senior Research and Policy Associate at the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at University of California, Berkeley. Anna, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Digging into this statistic, about 40% of working parents rely on grandmothers for childcare, according to this new survey from the Harris Poll. Why do so many families rely on relatives for care?
Certainly. Well, there is an impression in public discourse that licensed care, such as a center or a registered family childcare business, ought to be or would be the top preference for parents. But as many families will tell you, the reality is more complicated. A grandparent is not only someone who provides a deep level of trust and connection with their child, but they may actually have an edge in terms of what they can offer to that family. They can offer speaking the home language. They can offer being in your own home, providing a loving environment that builds bonding. And so this type of care also is frequently unpaid, which can be a boon to parents who are really struggling to pay for the cost of licensed care. But it's important to remember that cost really isn't the only factor that's encouraging parents to turn to those loved ones.
Has it been this way all along, this arrangement, or do you see a growing trend here on the reliance of grandparents and family and friends to fill in the gaps?
That's a great question. Well, friends and relatives have always been essential childcare providers. And in fact, they make up the most kind of share of childcare in our country. And we do see that there are some differences among, for example, the age of the child. For example, grandparents are more likely to be caring for a child under the age of 3 than they are for a preschool age child. And that does relate to the availability of childcare spaces for those age groups, since it can be much harder to find an infant and toddler space in a childcare program. But once again, there's also that deeper connection that has always been beneficial and valued by families.
You study early care and education systems, including this network of people caring for children that might be relatives or friends. You know, do you see how often do parents rely on this network for childcare in the U.S.? What do your findings show?
That's a great question. So the study that I lead is focused on the state of California, but there are other studies out there that give that national perspective. And relative care is very common. I heard you say in a poll that we are fearing that grandparents make up a significant percentage of that. And that does bear true. When we talk about friends and relatives, it is most often a grandparent who fills that role. And they may be also able to provide more flexible hours. They may be able to be closer to home for parents and just have that feeling of it felt right to provide care in that way.
In your study, you look at, you know, you find the vast majority of these caregivers are women, 87%. Can you give us a breakdown? Tell us more about who these people are, their motivations to become caregivers?
Certainly. So in our study, we really grouped grandparents as one category, separate from other friends and relatives, and then paid nannies, being people who are not related. It might be a friend that you know well, but if you have a paid arrangement with them, that kind of changes the nature of that care. And of course, some grandparents are paid, but most of them are not. And in terms of their motivation, the top motivation that they would share is that their loved one needed them, and so they were there. Sometimes grandparents will also say, well, I became a grandparent, therefore I am a caregiver. So having that just identity, the role implying taking on that responsibility. Meanwhile, for other relatives and friends, excuse me, for example, aunties and cousins or best friends, they might, you know, have gotten into this partially because they also felt needed, but it could also be that they had a background in babysitting. So they had developed a bit of a connection to caring for children in some other context. Meanwhile, nannies, you know, paid folks who are caring for children outside of their own family, they might also be thinking of this as a potential career. So a little bit of difference in motivation there.
Why did you include nannies in your surveys on family, friends, and neighbor childcare networks? It seems like a separate group.
That's a great question. So nannies can be potentially overlapping with these same categories. If you're a caregiver looking after the child of your cousin, you may also have the child of someone you don't know that well. And therefore, you hold these two different identities. So with that, we want to just stay open and flexible, understanding that these roles are not always so separate in terms of the individual.
We're talking about childcare, the patchwork it is, with Anna Powell at the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at UC Berkeley. You can join in. Your questions and thoughts are welcome at 800-642-1234. Anna, last year, a Pew Research Center study found about 5% of multi-generational households consist of grandparents and grandchildren younger than 25. Black and Latino families were more likely to live in these types of arrangements. What cultural differences are there in the network of friends, family, and neighbors?
Absolutely. So from the parent perspective, we did ask about the factors that influence their choice in using a grandparent or another friend or relative for care. And we found there's a heightened appreciation for the language that's spoken and also the cultural match that they have with that loved one. So even though, you know, safety and trust are always the top of list for parents, those other factors are particularly valuable to families of color and you know, families who speak languages besides English in the home. And from the caregiver's perspective, our study also looked at how the caregiver, the grandparent, or the relative saw themselves. And we saw this particular strength in knowing your worth and your identity as a caregiver among grandparents, for example, when there were Black and Latino grandparents. So this shows there's this heightened sense of connection to that role and knowing the value that you provide.
Knowing the value that you provide, I want to pick up on that, because for grandparents who aren't taking pay for this care, for the child, what is the best way to express your gratitude as a parent who you're placing your child in the hands of the grandparent? You know, how do you express gratitude if there isn't a transfer of payment?
Oh, that's a question I'd love to hear callers take up. But what I would say is that understanding that many grandparents will have different feelings about this, and I think it's going to be a deeply personal solution. Some grandparents, for example, may refuse to take any payment from their loved ones because they see this as an act of service and care, whereas other grandparents may be walking away from payment in a career that they themselves would otherwise be providing for their own household. So there could be a lot to think about there. But I would also encourage parents to think about the ways in which perhaps these are shared challenges that together we should be thinking about. For example, public funds and bills in legislation that could support caregivers in that way. So it's not merely just what can the parent do.
Let's bring in Casey in Shell Lake. Casey, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I think that we need to go a little further with government policy. We're missing the point here in terms of women's unenumerated labor, of how we contribute to the gross domestic product, about the lack of support, particularly amongst conservatives, for childcare, for supporting women employment, and that that is a direct path to women not being able to work and having to stay home and rely on grandparents who are often exhausted, or women who are doing childcare as well as helping their elderly parents. And I think that, that there is a feminist perspective here that we really need to look at that seems to be missing from this conversation.
Casey, thank you so much. Anna, what comes up for you as you look at policy and how the government has a role in this?
Absolutely. Her arguments really are speaking to the heart of this challenge. So one difference between the study that I worked on in California and the state of Wisconsin is that in California, parents who are receiving a child care subsidy can actually use those funds to pay a loved one, like a grandparent. Whereas in Wisconsin, the child care subsidy payments are only able to be taken to a licensed or registered facility. So one policy difference that stands out to me is the choice that parents may have, such that if they have a grandparent, they don't have to stay an unpaid caregiver if the parent should become eligible for a child care subsidy. Additionally, I understand that there has been some movement to try to have a caregiver tax credit, which would, instead of just giving parents funds to use towards their child care payment, might allow the person providing the care to receive a tax credit. So those would be two, I think, important mechanisms that Wisconsin could pursue.
Anna Powell is a senior research and policy associate at UC Berkeley's Center for the Study of Childcare Employment. You can join the discussion along the way. Call in with a question, share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Family, friends, neighbors, they may pitch in on childcare, enabling a parent to stay in Wisconsin's workforce. A survey by the Harris Poll reveals 2 in 5 working parents rely on grandmothers, in particular, for childcare. Call in with a question. You can share your experiences at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anna Powell is with us, senior researcher at UC Berkeley's, Center for the Study of Childcare Employment. Anna, what costs do unpaid caretakers like grandparents incur while watching their grandchildren?
They incur many costs. We find that the majority of grandparents are covering the cost of the transportation, the toys, the supplies, and the food that they're using in the course of providing that care. Sometimes for other relatives and friends, and usually for paid caregivers, some reimbursement might be part of that arrangement. But most common is that this is really something that comes out of the pocket of the person providing care.
Casey mentioned women's invisible labor and, you know, the idea of unenumerated labor. You know, with changes like you see in California and the policy shifts to help, you know, give some reimbursement for this care, what changes are you seeing? Is it a solution on the horizon?
A solution is a strong word, to be sure, but investing in strategies which can compensate folks for that care is a vital path forward. We could broaden the discussion to think about care more generally, as folks often do when I talk with them about this study, thinking about elder care at the same time, recognizing that care work has long been associated with women and been an assumed but invisible type of force in our economy. So in California, though, where we have the ability for subsidies to be given to a loved one or as a caregiver, this is, of course, only touching a fraction of folks who are providing care in this way. A longer-term solution would be thinking about something much more structural that would recognize caregiving and provide that financial support, irrespective of the parent's eligibility for a subsidy. So giving those resources directly to the caregiver who is perhaps giving up paid employment to provide this care.
Is there red tape? Is it difficult to get these subsidies?
Absolutely. There's always more folks who are eligible to receive a child care subsidy in any state, practically, than there are subsidies available. And typically, the funding for these, while it comes through the state, a lot of it's traced back to the federal government, which does supply a lot of rules and guardrails about how it can be used. Hence, these rules about the parent's eligibility being front and center. So it's important to think about as sometimes new mechanisms, since perhaps a tax code and a child care subsidy may be insufficient.
You know, I wonder, do grandparents, grandfamilies, do they have a voice in advocacy? I mean, you know, there are interest groups and other groups that are lobbying and advocating. Do you find that this particular share of people has a voice to be able to help make change?
I would say that there are in some places. We sometimes find that AARP and organizations like that recognize the connection between grandparents and grandchildren. But in terms of the voice that is most often represented, I think that licensed childcare workforce has a lot of organizing, but typically not as much connection to the grandparents and other folks like that. So it's perhaps a missed opportunity to join together. In California, one unique thing is that we do have a child care providers union where grandparents can be part of the same union as folks who are operating a child care program in their home. So all of these home-based providers can actually bargain together. And this, of course, is connected to the fact that California's state subsidy system allows for both types of caregivers to be in the conversation.
What have you observed out of that union? What has it been able to achieve through collective bargaining in California?
California is in a pretty exciting place in this respect. This union is now in its second agreement with the state, and they've just passed this new agreement this summer. And in that, they won a number of exciting benefits. First, they're going to be increasing the amount of dollars that are reimbursed to each caregiver for their care of that child. They're also going to have a retirement fund, access to health benefits, as well as some dollars for their learning and development and support. So a very exciting moment, and one that is only happening in a few states so far, but really helps lift up home-based care in general.
Where does California find that funding model in order to be able to build up this sector of childcare? Like, what is it relying on to be able to do this?
So in many ways, it is similar to what other states have in that a lot of the dollars do originally come from the federal government. But states have some leeway in how they spend the dollars, the amounts, the ways in which they distribute it, et cetera. And so with that, states always, every couple of years, get to kind of renegotiate with the federal government how they will use their dollars. And so changing the rate structure, for example, can be part of that. And that's something that every state can take advantage of.
We're talking about childcare and how families pitch in to make this patchwork work. Anna Powell is at the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at UC Berkeley and studies this. You can join in with your questions. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Anna, where does your study go from here? What questions are you working on now?
So we have just concluded one final survey of parents, and in that survey, we asked folks to help us go deeper on thinking through the nuance of what terms like health, safety, trust, and cultural match mean when they're talking about their attitude towards their grandparent care and other types of care like this. So we hoped you help expand on the nuance and talk about how these terms might mean different things to different people. For example, we spoke earlier about folks of different backgrounds. It could be that thinking about the word trust has particular nuance to some communities that may not be fully aware, visible to others. So we want to lift up these differences to really help the public and legislators understand the value that this type of care can have.
I wonder, do you see a true allyship between licensed childcare centers, which are advocating for their workers, but also these family caregivers, these, you know, oftentimes these grandparents? Do you think that those two can come together to be, you know, to unite in a powerful way?
It certainly can. And this does happen to some extent in many places. The licensed workforce shares some of that same history of having the legacy of oppression and being overlooked as predominantly female workers providing this essential service. So that is shared. But of course, many grandparents don't see themselves as a professional or a worker fundamentally. So there is a slight difference there, but a unified kind of care framework would include all of these parties. And in the states where they all have a stake in terms of thinking about policy, they can absolutely work together to call for change.
Yes. So what is your advice to Wisconsin lawmakers who are currently debating, you know, legislation to expand tax credits to help families and looking at other means to and make childcare more available? What would you tell Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So supports for the licensed workforce are essential. But thinking creatively about how to do tax credits that would support caregivers could be a really fantastic way to actually act as a leader among the states, to be able to go directly to supporting those caregivers, since you probably will need a different type of mechanism to support a grandparent than you would for somebody working in a licensed business. Pursuing these directions simultaneously can have massive benefits to Wisconsin's economy, to say nothing, of course, of the families who rely on that care. But stable childcare arrangements, whether they're in a licensed childcare center or home, or with a grandparent or other loved one, this is what helps family pursue their own financial stability. And they're all really helping the workforce go to work.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Anna Powell is a senior research and policy associate at the Center for the Study of Childcare Employment at University of California, Berkeley, and she recently published a series of studies on family, friend, and neighbor caregivers. Earlier, we heard from the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Peer Support Group in Waukesha with social worker Linda Senger and grandmother Judy Dysock. You can go to visit our program page to stream conversations like this one later on today. You can also give us an idea for future morning show and what we should cover next on the program. Visit wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.